but everyone in the bar does turn their heads to stare at us, almost in unison. The place is cramped. Not much to it besides the bar, a pool table, and some beat-up lawn furniture. It stinks of sweat, kerosene, and alcohol. "Pooh boy," someone says, then whistles loudly. I quickly realize that Marina and I are the only two women here. Hell, we might be the first women to ever set foot inside Trappers. The drunks staring at us range from tremendously overweight to alarmingly skinny, all of them dressed in halfway open plaid shirts or sweat-stained wife beaters, some of them flashing gap-toothed leers, others smoothing down unkempt beards as they size us up. One guy, in a ripped heavy metal t-shirt with a lower lip stuffed with chewing tobacco, breaks away from the pool table to sidle up next to Marina. "This must be my lucky night," the guy drawls, "because you go—" The rest of the pickup line is lost to the ages, because the moment this guy tries to slide his arm around her shoulders, Marina roughly snatches his wrist. I can hear the moisture on his arm crackle as it flash freezes. And a second later, the guy is crying out as Marina twists his arm behind his back. "Do not come near me," she says in a measured tone, loud enough so the whole bar knows that the warning doesn't go just for the dude whose arm she's almost breaking. Now the room truly does go quiet. I notice one guy let his beer bottle slip down in his hand so he's holding it by the neck. All the better for swinging. A couple of burly guys at the back table exchange looks and stand up, eyeballing us. For a moment, I think the whole bar might try rushing us. That would end badly for them, and I try to communicate that with my stare. Nine, who with his tangled black hair and dirty face fits right in here, cracks his knuckles and lolls his head back and forth, watching the crowd. Finally, one of the other hicks at the pool table hoots. "Mike, you dumbass! Say excuse me and get over here! It's your shot!" "Sorry," Mike whimpers to Marina, his arm turning blue where she's touching him. She shoves him away, and he goes to rejoin his friends, rubbing his arm and trying to avoid looking at us. Just like that, the tension breaks. Everyone goes back to what they were doing, which pretty much means guzzling beer. I figure scenes similar to that, little fights, stare-downs, maybe a stabbing or two, must happen in Trappers all the time. No big deal. Like I figured, this is one of those places where nobody asks any questions. "Keep it under control," I tell Marina as we walk to the bar. "I am," she replies. "Didn't look like it." Nine reaches the bar a step ahead of us, clearing a space between two hunchback drunks and slapping the chipped wooden surface. The bartender, who looks just a tad more alert and cleaner than his customers, probably because he's wearing an apron, looks us over with weary disapproval. "You should know I keep a shotgun under the bar. I don't want any more trouble," the bartender warns. Nine grins at him. "It's cool, old man. You got anything to eat back there? We're starving." "I could fry you up some burgers," the bartender replies after a moment's thought. "It's not possum meat or something, is it?" Nine asks, then holds up his hands. "Never mind. I don't want to know. Three of your finest, my man." I lean across the bar before the bartender can retreat into the kitchen. "You got a phone?" He jerks his thumb towards the bar's darkened back corner, where I notice a payphone hanging cockeyed from the wall. "You could try that. It works part of the time." "Looks like everything in here only works part of the time," Nine mutters, glancing at the TV mounted above the bar. The reception is bad at the moment. A news report swallowed up by static, the crooked rabbit ears emerging from the set, not doing their job. As the bartender disappears into the kitchen, Marina sits down with a couple of stools buffering her from Nine. She avoids eye contact, engrossed by the popping static on the TV. Meanwhile, Nine drums his hands on the bar, looking around, almost daring one of the drunks to say something to him. I've never felt so much like a babysitter. I'm going to try calling Chicago, I tell them. Before I can go, the scrawny chain smoker from outside squeezes into the space at the bar next to me. He flashes a smirk that's probably supposed to be charming, except he's missing a couple of teeth and it doesn't quite reach his eyes, which look wild and desperate. Hey, honey, he says, obviously having missed Marina's demonstration about what happens when drunks try flirting with us. Buy me a drink and I'll tell you my story. It's a doozy. I stare at him. Get away from me. The bartender returns from the kitchen, the smell of cooking meat coming with him and making my stomach growl. He notices the scrawny guy next to me and immediately snaps his fingers in his face. Thought I told you not to come in here if you don't have any money, Dale, the bartender barks. Go on now. Ignoring the bartender, Dale fixes me with one last pleading look. Seeing that I won't be budged, he slinks down the bar to beg one of the other patrons for a drink. I shake my head and take a deep breath. I need to get out of this place. I need a shower, and I need to hit something. I'm trying to keep it cool, to be rational about things, especially considering my two companions aren't acting all that stable. But I'm angry. Furious, really. Five knocked me out, practically took my head clean off. In that time I was unconscious, the whole world changed. I know I couldn't have seen it coming. I never expected one of our own would turn traitor, even a freak like Five. Still, I can't help but feel it would have been different if I'd had my guard up. If I'd been fast enough to dodge that first punch, Eight might still be alive. I didn't even get a chance to fight, and it makes me feel cheated and useless. I bottle that rage up, saving it for the next time I see a Mogadorian. Six, Marina says, her voice suddenly fragile, not so distant and cold. Look at this. The TV over the bar has started coming in, a rolling band of static disrupting the picture now and then, but a news broadcast is otherwise clearly visible. On it, a windblown reporter stands in front of a line of police tape, the John Hancock Center looming in the background. What the hell? I say under my breath. The roof shakes from a sudden peal of thunder outside. That was me, letting some of that rage slip. The newscast switches over from the reporter to taped footage of the top floors of the John Hancock Center, in flames. This can't be happening, Marina says, her eyes wide, looking to me for confirmation that this is just some sick joke. I've been trying to be the stable one, but I can't find anything reassuring to say. The bartender clicks his tongue, watching the TV, too. Crazy, right? Freaking terrorists. I lunge across the bar and grab him by the front of his apron before he can even think of reaching for his hidden shotgun. When did this happen? I snap. Damn, girl, the bartender says, sensing something in my eyes that makes him decide not to struggle. I don't know. Like, 2 days ago? It's been all over the news. Where the hell you been? Getting our asses handed to us, I mutter, and shove him away. I try to pull myself together, to beat back the panic. Nine's been completely silent since the report came on. When I look over at him, his expression is completely blank. He stares at the television, watching footage of our penthouse headquarters and his former home burning. His mouth open just a little, his body completely still, almost rigid. He looks like he's shutting down, as if his brain isn't capable of processing this latest blow. "Nine," I start, and my voice breaks his trance. Without a word to me or Marina, without so much as a look, he spins around and heads for the door. One of the pool players isn't quick enough to get out of Nine's way and gets shouldered to the floor. Trusting that Marina won't freeze anyone to death in my absence, I chase after Nine. By the time I'm out on Trapper's porch, Nine has already made it into the parking lot, stalking intently towards the gravel road. "Where are you going?" I shout after him, hopping the porch railing and jogging to catch up. "Chicago," he answers bluntly. "You're going to walk to Chicago?" I ask him. "That's your plan?" "Good point," he replies, not slowing down. "I'll steal a car. You guys coming or what?" "Stop being an idiot," I snap. And when that doesn't slow him down, I reach out with my telekinesis and grab him. I turn him around so he's facing me, his heels digging divots in the gravel as he tries to fight. "Let me go, Six," Nine growls. "Let me go right now." "Stop and think for a second," I insist, realizing as I start that I'm not just trying to convince Nine, but also myself. My fingernails dig into my palms. Not sure if that's from the concentration required to hold Nine with my telekinesis, or from me straining to keep it together. Back on the roof of the John Hancock Center, I'd told Sam that we were at war and that there would be casualties. I'd thought I was prepared for that, but losing 8? And now maybe losing the others in Chicago? No, I can't handle that. That can't have been my last conversation with Sam. It can't. "They wouldn't be in Chicago anymore," I continue. "They'd run. That's what we'd do. And we know John is still alive, or we'd have another scar. He's got the tablet. He's got his chest. They've got a better chance of finding us than we have of finding them. Last time I saw John, he was comatose. He's not up for finding anyone." "An exploding building tends to wake a person up," I counter. "He got out. We'd know if he didn't." After a moment, Nine nods reluctantly. "All right. All right, let me go." I let him loose from my telekinetic hold. He looks away immediately, peering down the darkened road, his broad shoulders slumped. "I feel like we're screwed, Six," Nine says, his voice hoarse. "Like we already lost and no one's got around to telling us." I walk up next to him and put my hand on his shoulder. Our backs to the neon light of Trapper's, I can't really see Nine's face, but I'm pretty sure his eyes are wet with tears. "Bullshit," I reply. "We don't lose." "Tell that to 8.
"Nine, come on."
Nine shoves both his hands through his tangled black hair, almost like he's going to pull some out. Then he brings his hands down over his face, rubbing it. When he drops them back to his sides, I can tell he's trying to be stoic. "It was my fault, too," he continues. "I got him killed."
"That's not true."
"It is. 5 kicked my ass and I couldn't help myself. Had to keep talking, had to show him. It should have been me. You know it, I know it. Marina damn sure knows it." I take my hand off Nine's shoulder and punch him in the jaw.
"Ow! Damn it!"
he yelps, staggering away from me and nearly losing his footing in the gravel.
"What the hell?"
"Is that what you want?" I ask, stepping towards him, fists clenched and ready. "Want me to kick your ass a little bit? Punish you for what happened to 8? Nine holds up his hands. "Cut it out, 6.
"It wasn't your fault," I tell him evenly, unclenching my fists
and then jabbing him hard in the chest with my fingers. 5 killed 8, not you. And the Mogadorians are to blame. Got it?
Yeah, I got it,
9 replies, although I can't be sure if I've actually gotten through to him or if he just wants me to stop assaulting him. Good. Enough with this mopey crap. We need to figure out what we're doing next.
I've already figured that out, Marina chimes in.
I was so intent on beating some sense into 9 that I didn't hear her approaching.
Neither did 9, and I can tell by the embarrassed look on his face that he's wondering how much Marina overheard.
At the moment, Marina doesn't seem concerned with 9's meltdown. She's too busy dragging along the scrawny guy from the bar, Dale, the one who wanted to trade me his awesome story for a beer. Marina leads him across the parking lot towards us, holding his ear like a cruel teacher escorting a delinquent to the principal's office. I notice the slightest coating of frost forming on the side of Dale's face.
Marina, let him go, I say.
She complies, yanking Dale ahead of her so that he stumbles into the gravel, ending up on his knees right in front of me. I give her a look. I understand where the violent streak comes from, but I don't like it. Marina ignores me.
Tell them what you told me, Marina orders Dale. Your amazing story.
Dale looks at the 3 of us, eager to please yet obviously terrified, probably thinking we're going to kill him if he doesn't listen.
There's an old NASA base out in the swamp. Got decommissioned in the 80s when the swamp started rising,
Dale begins haltingly, rubbing the side of his face to warm it up.
I go out there sometimes, looking for stuff I can sell. Normally it's deserted, but last night, man, I swear I saw UFOs floating around out there. Creepy guys who didn't look right, with guns like I ain't never seen, guarding the place. You ain't with them, are you?
No, I answer. We most definitely are not.
Dale's volunteered to show us the way, Marina says, nudging Dale with the toe of her sneaker.
He swallows hard, and then nods enthusiastically.
It's not far, he says. Couple hours through the swamp.
We just spent 2 days hiking out of that swamp, 9 says. Now you want us to go back in?
They have him, Marina hisses, pointing into the dark. You heard Malcolm's story about what they did to 1. They stole her legacies. I give Marina a sharp look. Even if most of it doesn't make any sense to him, Dale's still listening intently to our conversation.
Should we really be talking about this?
Marina snorts.
You're worried about Dale, 6?
They're killing us and blowing up our friends. Keeping secrets from this drunk is the least of our worries.
Dale raises his hand. I swear I won't say nothing about whatever you're talking about.
What about Chicago? 9 asks. What about the others?
Marina affords 9 only a quick glare. She keeps her eyes on me when she answers.
You know I'm worried about them. But we don't know where John and the others are, 6. We know where 8 is. And I am not, under any circumstances, letting those sick bastards keep him.
The way she says it, I know there's no way to convince Marina otherwise. If we don't go with her, she'll go by herself. Not that I even consider not going. I'm spoiling for a fight almost as bad as she is. And if there's a chance 8's body is still out there, in the clutches of Mogadorians still lingering in Florida, maybe with 5, then we have to at least try recovering it. Leave no guard behind.
Dale, I say, I hope you've got a boat we can borrow.
Chapter 5. The slab of meat in front of me looks like a soggy piece of uncooked fish, except it's lacking any texture whatsoever. I poke it with my fork, and the pale slab jiggles like jelly.